we've jumped in and we've looked at some of the cool stuff you've done in your life, and we're keen to chat about it. And I think the audience will be really keen to hear about it. Because I was saying to Isaac earlier, I think maybe you're the first artist that we've had on. We've had a lot of project founders, but you're an actual artist, you know? And so this is really cool for us. And so thanks for coming.
Yeah, dope, for sure. And I've got a bunch of other artists I can connect you to too. That's exactly what I do.
Sick, so, amazing.
Let's get into it.
Let me just ask you a question straight up. So the first thing I noticed is I was kind of looking through some of the stuff you've done. And so obviously there's been some projects that you've done which have blown up, which we'll obviously get into. But one of the results of that is potentially you opened at a festival or something like that for an artist named Wu-Tang Clan. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. That was actually one of the first and best utilities that I offered to my holders. That was last year in Atlantic City, New Jersey. So I opened for Wu-Tang Clan and Waka Flocka. And what's crazy is through Web3, I actually met Ray Acosta, who is the booking manager who booked Wu-Tang Clan for that show. So it's crazy to see the connection come full circle, because like I opened for him, but I had no connection to them, right? But then I met Ray, and then we ended up, after knowing each other for a while, we ended up talking about this. I was like, oh, you actually booked that show. So yeah, it's crazy. Wow. But you see everybody coming into the space from new artists to OGs, right?
Yeah, totally. 100%. How important is like making connections in the music industry, do you think? That's an obvious question, but interesting how you respond.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very important, right? That can completely change your career. But I'm also speaking from the position of someone who doesn't have that many connections in the music industry. Like I may have gotten a deal once upon a time, but I don't have that many legit connections to other artists or, you know, other powerful people in the industry. So, you know, I think that's something that's very valuable. But for me, I'm mostly looking to network with other artists and connect with other artists, you know. But I think it's very important, and it can certainly change your whole career. And so that's something I'm focused on: networking, connecting with new people, bringing them into my world with Web3 and NFTs as well.
Amazing.
So I wanted to talk about one of your the greatest video of all time, I will say. the Jordan Belfort.
I was like, is this based on your favorite movie ever?
Oh, I mean, so first of all, it's a two-part question. What's your favorite part about the Wolf of Wall Street? And how did you guys go about making that? Because I know it was very early days for you guys. So how did you guys go about making that music video, Jordan Belfort, with you had the yacht, the mansion, the Lamborghini?
Yeah, I mean, so making the video is a crazy story. Like, you won't believe how that came out. But I mean, let me start with the inspiration, right? So just like you, I saw the movie and I was like, amazing movie. I loved it. You know, it's so hard to pick. There's so many iconic scenes, you know, the part when, you know, her foot is up on his face and he's like crawling on the ground. I mean, the part with all the partying, like all the, I mean, even in the beginning when they're just getting the company going, like, it's all so cool. Right. So I felt the same way. I love the movie. I saw it like right when it came out. I think it came out December 25th and I was seeing it like first week of January. And then I went to my friend Wes Walker's house, who's one of my close friends since middle school. And we were just hanging out, kind of messing around. We always like to freestyle. He showed me this new beat and I was like, yo, we got to rap about this guy, Jordan Belfort. I was thinking, you know, we're shouting out the new boss. It's like, you know, Rick Ross has a song where he's like, I think I'm Big Meech, Larry Hoover. Like, literally, I'm thinking of that. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to shout out the new boss, Jordan Belfort. Everyone's going to know about this guy. And that's where the inspiration for the song came from. Like, we just made it, put it out on SoundCloud like any other song, like any other two kids in high school. I mean, back then it was the early days of SoundCloud, right? So we had a little bit of recording equipment. We actually recorded it on my Blue Yeti USB mic that I was using for Call of Duty commentary and making videos. So I started out actually like making Call of Duty videos and stuff like that. And then we made this song, Jordan Belfort. And we had a couple other songs, whatever, but we never expected Jordan Belfort would blow up like it did. So it actually took about a year and a half, 2 years before it got to the first million streams. So, you know, it wasn't like some kind of overnight thing like happens on TikTok nowadays, yeah. right? Like everyone's so used to this TikTok overnight blow up. But back then the algorithms weren't like that. Yeah. Like you couldn't just blow up overnight like that back then. I mean, it certainly wasn't as common as it is now. So this song just slowly grew as more people saw the movie, right? Because you know, you might like the song, but it really has that value if it's connected to the movie. So it took a while for it to finally blow up. And then it was the summer that it had hit a million streams where we were like, okay, we need to make a music video for this. And so we called College Weekly and Yofrey Ray, who was a guy that went to our high school, right? Or to Wes's high school, because we went to different high schools, right? So we called Yofrey, and he had already made so many videos and gone viral for making videos of partying. So we called Yofrey and we went down to Miami. We had no money, no funding. We're just two independent artists, but we had a song that a lot of people knew. It was like viral at colleges. And back then it was like Facebook was still very relevant. Instagram was more new. And so like we were posting on Facebook and being like, hey, you know, he was using his network in Florida because he had actually gone to school there for a little bit. And so between just old fashioned networking, calling around, showing people the song, we actually got access to all the stuff you see in the video pretty much for free. In many ways, it's similar to another music video, which actually showed people going around knocking on the doors, which was the Save That Money video. But in a way, we did that with this.
Yeah. Where is that a Little Dicky song? Yeah. So that's great.
We went around knocking on doors. When I saw that video, I'm like, yo, that's pretty much what we did. We just didn't document it. But even getting the yacht was this crazy story where Yofrey had shot a video on that yacht before. And so he called the girl whose father, it was his yacht, right? Yeah. And basically said, hey, we're trying to shoot the music video for this song. And he was like a Wall Street guy. So he immediately understood the song and understood the appeal of it. And he loved the movie and loved the idea of the song. So he brought us out on that huge yacht and let us party on it and do everything, right? Like even the story with the Lamborghini, like we had some guy coming to drop it off for us to rent it, right? And the first day he didn't come. And we were like totally blown. We were all ready to shoot. He didn't come. And so we were like, all right, we're screwed on the Lambo. But the next day we got him to come, but like at half price because he felt bad that he like stood us up the first day. So like we're just cutting corners everywhere we can. And we came out with that amazing music video. And so we did that all independently. And that's pretty much when the labels really started taking interest in what we were doing.
And earlier you mentioned Wu-Tang Clan. So I know about the Martin Shkreli, the Wall Street guy that bought the Wu-Tang Clan album for $1 million. And it was like a big one of one thing. They had the unreleased album. Do you know about the Wu-Tang situation? So they had that one of one original album. Do you think that was a really good inspiration point for a lot of people that are making one of ones? And would you ever release something that was like, oh, I'll never release this to anyone else ever, you can have the sole recording, like this is a one of one? Or do you think that that's not really where you want to go with your NFTs?
Yeah, so that's a great example of the potential value of a music collectible. I think it's really cool and it's awesome that they had that high sale. And I think it's certainly a cool way to look at the value of music collectibles. Some of the other ones I look at are the Beatles, the White Album, which has sold for hundreds of thousands. There's an Elvis album that's pretty valuable. If you look at the Nirvana collectible albums, you can actually see that he did his stuff where there's all different tiers and different rarity, very similar to how I've created my NFTs and how a lot of other NFTs look as well. Yeah. So when it comes to exclusive, one of one music, especially like that, where it can only be listened by the holder, I view that as a very niche use case. The only reason that's valuable is because of the brand around Wu-Tang Clan. So it's not like a sustainable model for designing an NFT or a collectible, but I think it's cool to say, hey, this is like a fine art by the Wu-Tang Clan that because of their brand can be super valuable. So when artists are looking at one of ones, I think it's a good way to get started. I think there can be a strategy there to one of ones, but I also think that network effects is so important with music. So what I'm focused on is how do you get a lot of collectors on different tiers of rarity, right, around a work of music? And that's what I've done with Crypto Rich. So we have everything from common item holders who might hold one of the songs on Polygon, or they might hold a Solana NFT, or they might hold a trading card, a common trading card for the album. But then we also have the VIP holders who might have one of the VIP tokens, or they might even have a rare one of one. So in my NFT ecosystem, the one of ones actually fit in there as a rare VIP token, which makes a lot of sense to me. And as far as gating the music, I see it as something that's cool, niche feature, but ultimately I want the music to be out there and the NFTs to be the way to own a piece of that music in Web3 and have your bet or your investment in the artist, right? So that's kind of the environment I see. But in terms of like the Wu-Tang album being, you know, worth $1 million or whatever it was, multiple, it shows the potential value of these NFTs. And I'm always saying, well, imagine if this was a digital token, you know, imagine if this was connected to an album that went Billboard, right? And so I think the Wu-Tang thing is cool, but it, and it's also just like, the value can be much bigger. So I think what I'm focused on and what I've always been saying is this can create a $1 billion market cap for artists, right? And so that is kind of the bigger goal to me. It's like, sure, a couple $1 million is an opportunity. And I think a lot of artists come into this space and maybe they only see the couple $1 million opportunity. But what I see is the potential for you to NFT your whole catalog and NFT your whole brand as an artist. Yeah. And I think that's a $1 billion opportunity, many billions, right? So in the future, we're going to see artists with billions of dollars of market cap in Web3. And that's what really gets me excited, is to see artists, you know, become as valuable as they're truly worth. Yeah. I mean, Kanye West, Drake, Snoop Dogg even could have this $1 billion market cap. I think it needs to be a big focus on utility. There needs to be a tour around it. There needs to be merch around it. I mean, I'm thinking, imagine a Kanye West VIP token, which gets you the new pair of Yeezys. You get new merch from him. You get to go to his tour and be in VIP section and get all this access. So to me, that's like the $1 billion NFT idea, when the artist fully integrated into all the products they sell and into their career. So yeah, I know that's a long-winded answer.
No, that's great. That's
amazing. This is what we talk about all the time. You know, we talk about this on Twitter spaces. We talk about how can a big celebrity like the Taylor Swift, the Drake, you know, come into this space and have a $1 billion market cap. I mean, we've seen some of them go for like a $1 million opportunity, but when we see them understand the full potential, you know, if Bored Apes can go from zero to several billion in 1 year, then I'm sure a music artist could do the same, maybe even more.
Yep. No, I totally agree. Okay. So I love where you're going with this, and maybe we could continue this, maybe using your project as an example. So I've spoken to a lot of artists. Some of them are some relatively established in different genres, and there seems to be somewhat of a theme that they kind of, they understand that Web3 is here. They understand some of the terms that you're talking about, but they feel like they don't understand where the on-ramp is for them personally. And so it would be like really, really powerful if you could explain a little bit of your story from, so just a bit of background. So you're talking about Crypto Rich. That's an album that's come out recently. And so there's a few, I think one of the bigger songs on there is called Bad Hair. I was looking at that on YouTube. Again, amazing YouTube video. It's 170,000 streams. Like it's really great. And so could you talk a little bit about what you've done with that specific album? I know you've got different tiers with different utility on different, like some of them are on OpenSea, some of them on Rarible, some of them are on different blockchains. Could you talk a little bit about, from like a on-ramp perspective, how an artist could do what you've done? Is it achievable just for the common artist?
Yeah, for sure. A lot embedded in there. I want to start with one thing that's really important. Most artists are way too focused on whether or not they can onboard their current fan base, instead of realizing that this is a new potential fan base to sell new products, and it doesn't have to affect your traditional fans. Yeah. If they don't want your NFTs, they don't need to be involved in this. Crypto Rich is an album that's on YouTube, Spotify. I still have Instagram. I still have all these traditional ways of engaging with my audience. My NFTs are a new product that's available to anyone who understands Web3. Yeah. And artists need to understand that there's a multi-billion dollar opportunity here in Web3 without onboarding a single one of their fans. Now, I don't want to say anything negative about onboarding. Of course, it's important to onboard your fans and give them a way to get involved and do your best to bring them on, but you can't force them to get into Web3. And that's what I've found, that 99% of my sales are from going to the Web3 community with my music and my NFTs, rather than just onboarding people. Now, I've spent a good amount of time onboarding people. You know, I've let people pay me in Venmo and then transfer them NFTs, everything to get my people involved, right? Like I'm doing everything I can. So I don't want to undervalue onboarding your community, but also realize that that's not what it's all about. This is like bringing your music to a new country, which is the metaverse, and you're going to have to redesign it a little bit. You're going to have to change your product a little bit. Just like if you were a, you know, guitar player who's trying to figure out how to put your stuff on Spotify, right? You have to redesign your music a little bit for the metaverse, for NFTs. And then once you figure it out, you're selling products to a completely different stream. It's like, you know, learning how to make an NFT is probably not that much harder than, you know, figuring out how to get good at TikTok. I mean, I've put in the hours on TikTok to figure out how to do stuff over there, and I still suck at it, right? So you always have to repurpose what you're doing and figure out how to make a new type of content, something like this. And NFTs aren't different. And so for me as a music artist, I released Crypto Rich in 2019. And my whole goal with releasing Crypto Rich is using my music platform to inspire people to have financial and creative freedom, to look into crypto, to look into NFTs, to look into Web3. Because I already had this big hit song, and I actually took a couple years off from music after touring. I you know, things had slowed down. I went back and finished school. And then I realized I have this big platform. And I had got into crypto in 2016. So I went back to school for finance in New Orleans. I was finishing up my education. And in my junior and senior year, I went all in on Ethereum and Bitcoin with the little bit of money I'd saved up from the Jordan Belfort song, which really wasn't that much. I mean, you got to understand, I got totally screwed over in my deal. I have made much from my NFTs in the last 2 years as the label paid me in the last decade.
Wow.
So I've made more selling my NFTs than the labels paid me in a much quicker time without giving up my ownership too. My NFTs are about utility. They're about access to my community. That's what makes them valuable. Instead of, you know, with the label deal, I saw what they do is they take the smallest piece of the pie in the music industry and they divide it up as much as possible. And then artists have to focus on touring, performing, brand deals. But this is the biggest piece of the pie in the industry. So for me, what I've done is created a new asset with my NFT that gives you access to my shows, access to one-on-one calls with me, advisory, marketing support, access to my social medias, right? Access to partnerships, brand deals, and collaborations. So that's what drives my NFTs valuation, right? And so what's cool about music NFTs is I see a huge opportunity for artists to retain their ownership. So I haven't yet connected any type of royalties to my NFT. That's something I could do at any time. But I think it's amazing to say I still own 100% of my copyright, and I have made even more money than I was paid for the Jordan Belfort song, where I gave up, you know, 82% of the copyright. I was left with 18%. That's how record deals go. That's common for a single song deal, right? So it's crazy. And the potential here is to give the power back to the artist. So now I still own my copyright. I still own Crypto Rich. I still own the masters. And my community is giving me the funding to go out and make music videos, to go out and reinvest in my music, and to really get it out there. And so that's what's amazing. So in terms of what my NFT does, some of the examples, it gets you into shows like the Wu-Tang show we talked about. I just did a bunch of events at NFT NYC. I was carrying around a bag of merch the entire time. You had a VIP, I just opened the bag and let people take merch, right? Like that's the kind of utility that I'm providing. We're also doing a real merch drop that ships to your house, but this is like the test run of stuff, and I'm running around the city trying to find VIP collectors. So it's all about that stuff. Any one of my collectors, whether you're a VIP or whether you just have an inexpensive NFT, you can book a one-on-one call with me. I have a Calendly collectors. They can book me anytime that I make it available. I have plenty of availability, even with 1,000 collectors. So it's very scalable. I mean, I already have 1,000 collectors, and I'm not kidding. My calendar is very often available. So anyone can come book a call with me to do some kind of business, you know, to talk about whatever, to get advisory, marketing support. So that's all really important to me. And then I also have Music NFT Radio, which has become one of the biggest music focused Twitter spaces, which we run 24/7. So I'm building all different types of utility for my collectors. And it's kind of, you know, it's grown into such a diverse offering. We have everything from access to shows, events, merch, exclusive experiences. That's like the fan side, right? Then you have the B2B side, which is business to business, which I'm selling to other creators and other platforms, which is like, hey, come on my radio, talk about your product, get onto my podcast. We have Music NFT Radio podcast. It's recorded on the show live on Twitter Spaces. Yeah. You know, get advisory and marketing support from me. You know, get support on your projects, everything from helping you design it to doing marketing and stuff like that. Yeah. So also brand deals and partnerships. Whenever I do a deal with a brand or a partnership with a project, I'm trying to run it through my NFTs, which creates value for me and my collectors. So what I think is important is attaching all the services and products that I'm offering to my NFTs to make them as valuable as possible.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, so just a quick question as well in regards to the mechanics of that. So let's say, for example, someone goes on to OpenSea or Rarible and they buy one of your NFTs, which gives them access to, you know, one-on-one calls with you and stuff like that, or merch. I think the merch example is really interesting. So you're walking around, you know, with a bag of merch. How do you verify that these people own the NFT? Are they showing you something, some sort of verification? Do you have a list? Like, just again, I'm just thinking about the mechanics of someone else trying to do what you're doing. Like, how are you keeping track of 1,000 people who may or may not still have the NFT? Have they sold it? Should they still be a part of this inner circle? How does that sort of stuff work? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so it's a lot more personal than it seems on the surface. You know, okay. Everything is a process of building and working together. So I have 50 to 100 VIPs. I know all of them. I know all of them personally, right? Like, I know all of them personally. I have 1,000 collectors. Like, anyone that came to NFT NYC, it was easy to see me. Like, there weren't more than, you know, 30 to 50 collectors there out of my 1,000, maybe 100. Yeah. And anyone that was unable to see me was probably because they were too busy doing something else, right? Like, there was no issue of like someone that was like, felt like they didn't get what they deserve, because it is very personal. So at the same time, everything's done through Discord. I can easily send out some kind of message that could be like, hey, go to this private channel. All the roles are set up through Discord. So that's one way to deliver private content. I'm doing a new build out right now that's going to allow me some more stuff through my website. But I think part of it is just understanding that, like, it's all very manual, personal. If I had to use Google Forms for something, I would use Google Forms for something, right? Yeah. And it's pretty easy to check on the blockchain. Like, I'm not getting hundreds of sales a day. You know, and so when someone sells, it's pretty easy for me to like notice that they sold, especially if there's someone who's trying to develop a relationship with me. Now, there's some people who haven't, maybe they bought my NFT, they've barely talked to me, I don't know who they are. Yeah. Like, they're also not the person who's trying to meet up with me, right? So like, when the person wants to meet up with me and that's their goal or whatever, it's pretty easy to figure it out. And then with the merch stuff, it's like, same thing. It's like, I know who the VIPs are, but also I'm just giving out hats, you know? Yeah. So,
I hear.
But in the future, let me explain in the future how it'll look. In the future, I'm building an integration with Shopify, where you'll come into my Shopify, connect your MetaMask wallet, and that will give you, let's say, $200 of store credit.
Amazing.
Which then you'll be able to go choose through hundreds of items on my merch store and pick out exactly what you want. So this is just like a test run. And as I get more funding, I can scale things up. I think a lot of people coming into the space, they, especially artists coming in trying to design these products, they think in way too much of a final way, when really what we're doing is we're building a work in progress. You know, we're getting funding along the way. When I have enough funding to throw down the money to give everyone store credit and do a run like this, I'll gladly do it. But no one is hounding me on the date when I'm going to do the first merch drop. It's just something that I say, guys, it's coming. If you come see me at one of my shows, I'll bring giving you merch. And when I have the funding to do it, I'm going to do a sick Shopify integrated automated thing. And hopefully I can build this to a business where I can do that annually, you know, or every time I drop a new, you know, or every, you know, every couple months, it just depends. Right. Yeah. So I think that we need to realize, and artists coming in the space need to realize, that it's a process of building. You can't do everything all at once. I've built that into my model. Right. But when it comes down to it, if someone comes to my show in Vegas this weekend, or if someone comes to my show in Miami next year, or my show with Wu-Tang Clan in Jersey, right? It's just a matter of, hey, I'm at the show. I'm trying to get in. Right. They can't, you know, unless I had an automated portal set up to where they're going to show up, then they could do it that way. But for now, it's like, hey, I announce it. If you're in the area, you reply to my announcement, you reach out to me, and I get you on my guest list. Gotcha. And so far, I have never had a show where so many people showed up that guest list didn't work, right? And if that was going to happen, I would probably know in advance and be able to figure it out. But thinking long term, every event promoter and party planner, event planner, festival planner would love to hear that you have 100 people locked in to come to the show. That's where we're headed, is eventually I'll be able to say, hey, this event sounds awesome, and I have 100 confirmed people because they're my NFT collectors. And so that's something that I want you to include in my booking. And that is a value add for both me and the person booking the show. So however that needs to be arranged, we can always figure that out. And I think it gives leverage to us as a community to be able to say, hey, we've got a process for actually bringing people out to shows, and it's all automated through NFTs and through the blockchain. So I think it's pretty cool, and that's where this is headed.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. That's really cool. So from DJing bar mitzvahs to shotgunning beers, freestyling on radio stations, and launching your own NFT project, do you have any tips for yourself 10 years ago to get into freestyle rap and into the music industry?
Ah,
yeah, that's a good one. I guess my main tip to myself would have been, make more music and just release it as quickly as possible. And I'm probably still not doing that well enough. But at the same time, it's important to focus and grow something. But if I could have done one thing differently, I probably would have released a lot more music right after Jordan Belfort, regardless of the quality, or get in the right situations. But I would say the situation with the label kind of held us up, because we were focused on this one more song with the label that really we didn't turn into anything. It's like, I should have just focused on making my own album and getting my own album out as soon as possible. Right. So that was one thing. Also, we could have done a lot more video content from our tours, but I've tried to, combine what we have into something cohesive. Yep. So, yeah, I mean, those would be the things that I have to add. And also, guys, I have to get off for another call, unfortunately. But this has been awesome.
Yes, let me wrap. So thank you so much for coming on. And just so you know, we were going to talk about It's Lit. We were going to talk about the real estate company you worked at. We're going to talk about Advantage Blockchain. We didn't talk about any of those things. And so, I mean, we also have you back at some point. Thank you so much for your time now. Where can people find you? And then we'll let you go.
Yeah, you can find me on my website, itslit.org. Just go to my Twitter as well, Famous Dill, and just look on OpenSea. Look up Dill, D-Y-L. And you'll find the collection. Pick up some NFTs there. We got a new mint coming up. A lot of exciting stuff. So thanks for having me on. Done. Come hang out with Music NFT Radio anytime. We do 24/7 music NFTs on Twitter Spaces. So and looking forward to coming back on. We'll talk a little more about Advantage Blockchain and some of the other stuff I've done.
Boom, done. Thank you so much, Dylan. We'll let you go.
Thanks, Dylan.
Catch ya.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Great. Yep. Talk to you later.